prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to Superhuman Radio. A couple of announcements to make before we get started with the show today. First of all, if you're experiencing some trouble at superhumanradio.com, I apologize. We are actually undergoing a server expansion. We are moving to a RAID server with multiple mirrored hard drives because the traffic to the website has just exploded in the past few months. And during this process of moving over, we have some limited access to the current site until we get everything switched over. So I apologize in advance if you're trying to get to the site and you are receiving denial of service. We know about it. We're working on it. And hopefully by the end of this week, it will all go away and we will move forward. Also, want to mention, sponsor of the show, Primordial Performance. They have their annual summer sale. Every year we do this, up to 40% off of all of their products. This is an amazing sale. Lots of people actually stock up on all of their supplements that they use for the whole year during this period of time. This will be a one-week sale. Go to primordialperformance.com and check out. Everything is up to 40% off. Okay. I've said it numerous times on this show. My new mantra is there is a perfect storm occurring out there that is causing disease in our population. It's a combination of things, the food we eat, the environmental toxins. Really, all of the problems stem from what I call arrogance, the arrogance of the human race to think that we are smarter than Mother Nature and that we can do whatever we want to our bodies, including loading them up with chemicals, living in a soup of poison, and expect not to get ill. My guest today has written a book called Living Downstream, which is now becoming a feature-length documentary. And we're going to be talking about this today with Sandra Steingraber. How are you doing, Sandra?
Fine, thanks.
Okay. First of all, in order for my audience to really get a feel for how you got involved in this, let's go back to when you were in college in your 20s. What happened?
In between my sophomore and junior year of college, just after I turned 20, I was diagnosed with bladder cancer, and some of the questions my diagnosing physician asked me while I was lying there sort of still exhaling anesthesia were about what I had been exposed to in the environment. And as a young biologist, after I got out of the hospital, went back to the university library, I began mucking around in the literature discovered that, in fact, bladder cancer is considered a quintessential environmental cancer, with known links to environmental exposures going back, data going back 100 years or more. And yet, something else also shocked me, which was to discover that just because we had, in some cases, absolute proof that some chemicals cause bladder cancer, doesn't mean that we outlawed those chemicals. There's nothing in the law that would require them to no longer be used. And I guess that was a stunning realization to me. And I was, a non-smoker. I was a runner and still am a runner. And so there was nothing in my lifestyle that could explain this. On the other hand, my aunt died of the same kind of bladder cancer I had.
Did she live in the same area that you grew up?
She did. We're all from Illinois, both sides of my family. My mom was in cancer treatment at the same time I was. She had metastatic breast cancer in her mid-40s, and I was, of course, then diagnosed with bladder cancer in my early 20s. But I'm adopted. That's the punchline to my family story. And so I knew as a biologist and as an adoptee that there was something wrong with this presumption that what runs in families necessarily runs in genes. So I became interested as a young biologist 30 years ago now to take a look at chemical carcinogens. So that became my life's work as a biologist.
You know what's really interesting? The most profound thing to come out of the Human Genome Project was that the environment plays a bigger role than genetics in your physical outcome.
Well, there's a lot of stunning things about the Human Genome Project, one of which is also that we have far fewer genes than we thought. We don't really have any more than, fruit flies or mice. And also we're realizing now that most common diseases actually require lots of genes to participate, not just any one. So the search for, you know, the one errant gene mutation is no longer what we're looking for anymore. Instead, it's become clearer and clearer that really it's the interaction between our genes and our environment that causes things like cancer. And I think this is really good news, actually, because if the evidence, on the other hand, had showed us that it was inherited problems, then we'd be screwed. I mean, you can't change your ancestors. You know? But we put the chemicals into the environment, we can take them out. So I think that the news that the environment plays a bigger role in the story of human cancer than we have previously appreciated is actually a hopeful story.
Were you able to pinpoint the chemicals that you came in contact with that you believe precipitated your cancer?
Well, it depends on what you mean by pinpoint. I mean, I'm a sample size of one, right? So as a biologist, I would have to say no. What I can say, though, is that after I spent a year doing a postdoc at Harvard looking at the data on cancer in the environment, I went back to my hometown and became a kind of environmental detective there, moved into my sister's basement. And what I did discover is that there are chemicals linked to bladder cancer in my hometown drinking water wells, a solvent called perchloroethylene. It's used to dry clean clothes. It's also used to degrease metal parts in machine shops.
Probably
how it got into, I grew up in a kind of industrial hometown. There are also plenty of bladder carcinogens released from the two different coal-burning power plants that I grew up just downwind of. And there are, you know, bladder carcinogens in the landfill where, in my hometown, which is not far from my house, where the county actually makes money importing hazardous waste from other states. So there's also elevated cancer rates. So, you know, the story of cancer in my hometown is bigger than me. I'm just one data point in this collective story. There are chemicals known to be linked to these kinds of cancers in the community. There are many hazardous waste sites there and so forth. So how much evidence do you want before you say you've pinpointed something?
Oh, and you know what? It doesn't even take – to me, it's you know, it really is arrogance, in my opinion. I think that humans are arrogant. We think that we can bombard ourselves with this stuff and it's going to have no consequence. And that, I mean, it doesn't take this type of data. It doesn't take a longitudinal study. It doesn't take the gathering of all this information to tell somebody that if you ingest just a little bit of arsenic every single day, eventually it will catch up with you. And really, all of these chemicals and preservatives and agents and everything else that, you know, the federal government through its governing bodies approves for our consumption and our exposure to, you know, it's just, I just get so frustrated. Because I want to say to someone up at Capitol Hill, you are sanctioning the death, the unnecessary and early demise of thousands and thousands and thousands of people in this country. And in other countries as well, because of your arrogance to think that it's okay to ingest just a little bit of this and just a little bit of that on a day-to-day basis. And it really frustrates me. It just frustrates me because life is so precious. I don't care what religion you subscribe to. This life you have right now is so precious, and you need to do everything you can to make it as enjoyable and healthy as possible. And then you have the powers that be, which are the government, working against you.
Well, I'm happy to say I did actually just go to Capitol Hill and say something like that. The President's Cancer Panel exists and has existed since 1971. It was started by Richard Nixon, actually. And this current panel took up the question of the environment's role in the burden of human cancer and just came out with a report last month in May concluding that the role that the environment plays in cancer has been grievously underappreciated and urged President Obama to use the power of his office to remove cancer-causing chemicals from air, food, and water. It was a very strongly worded statement. And so because Living Downstream, my own book, came out about the same time along with the documentary film, I was invited to give a congressional briefing to both staffers on both the House side and the Senate side, and also met with White House staff to talk about these issues. And so that conversation is going on.
I want to talk more about that experience. I want to go ahead and go into the break early. I want to talk more about your experience with meeting with the individuals on Capitol Hill and telling them your story and their responses. We're talking today with Sandra Steingraber, and she is the author of Living Downstream, and now the feature-length documentary by the same name. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
Are you tired of the same old pre-workout product? Would you like to catapult your body's growth and performance potential to an entirely new level? LG Science's Anadrolic State GT is the world's first kinetic amplification system. Anadrolic State GT goes beyond the pre-workout powders in functionality, adaptation, and power. Anadrolic State GT is the first of its kind, allowing users to take aggressive control in the gym with ferocious focus, explosive energy, and dominating strength. Anadrolic State GT is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet, and other fine retailers. Get yours today and join the LG Sciences uprising.
A company committed to truth in advertising, to science-driven product development, a company that still believes in accountability to its customers. All American EFX is that company. With a full line of performance-enhancing aids like Crealkaline EFX Pro, muscle pump amplifiers like Nitric EFX, growth and recovery enhancers like LBA Pro and LG5 Pro, and a fully tested core nutrition series. So if you want the very best in bodybuilding and performance supplements, go to any GNC or visit AAEFX.com today. That's AAEFX.com. All American EFX. We don't play games. We just help you win them.
We all know how effective amino acid supplements are. Well, get ready to be shocked. Amino acid supplements just reached a new level of strength. Say hello to Gear. Gear is super concentrated, super potent, and so bioavailable, it's equivalent to injectable amino acids. Gear is best used between meals to keep nitrogen balances tilted towards anabolism. Gear causes an increase in anabolic signaling that tells your muscles it's time to grow. Get Gear today by visiting needtobuildmuscle.net. Gear. This ain't your daddy's amino acid supplement.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
You know, you can save an additional 10% off the already low, low prices at orbitnutrition.com by using the coupon code SHR10. That's SHR10 at checkout. Go to orbitnutrition.com and check them out. They've got everything you need in one place. Orbitnutrition.com. Best products in the universe at the best prices. Check it out. My guest today is Sandra Steingraber. We're talking about her book, Living Downstream, and also the feature-length documentary by the same name that discusses the realities of chemical contamination, which, you know, we really take it for granted. Sandra, when you were meeting with these individuals on Capitol Hill, were you... And you were telling them your story. Did you feel that there was a level of sincerity in their concern, or were they just doing what politicians do best?
Well, some were concerned, and some were not.
Who strikes you that you recall that seemed to really connect to the problem and look like they were really interested in what you were saying?
Oh, I think I especially recall that some of the members of different agencies, and some of them are retired, right? And so there were people who were have retired from public service, but who were who packed this room with standing room only when I was there as part of the Breast Cancer Fund and the Collaborative on Health and Environment provided a briefing on the new President's Cancer Panel report. And so I think that the people who had devoted their life's work to looking at the intersection between health and the environment and who had now retired were happy to come and listen.
You know, I am not a conspiracy theorist, although every time I say that, I start to think maybe I am. But I can't help but think that politicians are self-serving overall. And in their approach to being self-serving, they kowtow to the lobbyists and organizations, the large chemical companies like Dow and so on and so forth, that spend so much money in this country making politicians the politicians that they are. And that while they say, gee, you know, I understand, they really have no intention of disrupting that apple cart and going against their supporters. Do you feel that way, or do you think that I'm just being cynical?
Well, I wouldn't disagree. I would say that there's all kinds of other things happening now that give me reason to think that the future may not be like the past, and that's not to downplay some serious obstacles in the form of, you know, conflicts of interest and so forth, but. I mean, look, the burden of cancer is so high now that it's cancer is the most expensive disease that you can have. I happen to have the most expensive kind of cancer that you can have, bladder cancer, because happily you can live quite a long time with it, but it's the cancer of all human cancers that's the most likely to recur. And so you're in medical surveillance basically for the rest of your life.
I know. My dad actually had bladder cancer about 20 years ago, and he just passed away last year, but he had bladder cancer about 20 years ago, and he was part of a test group. They had just moved to Arizona, and he was part of a test group that tested theotepin, which they did like a bladder wash. And luckily, he went into remission, but he also quit smoking simultaneously. But yeah, I'm familiar with bladder cancer. It's very difficult to get rid of.
Yeah, I mean, you're in there for, you know, for every couple months for forever.
Well, he went back to at once a year for the entire period of his life.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, once a year is good. You know, I've gotten to the once a year point, and then some. The movie Living Downstream tells the story that I've gotten, you know, every now and then you get these ambiguous results, and we don't know what it means, and so then you're back, you know, every few months again. And so, it's, you know, the wheels of medical surveillance just go around and around. And so, all right, so you've made this very eloquent I would call it a human rights story. And that's the story I presented in Washington, D.C. as well, that, look, you know, I don't know if it was me who got cancer because of the bladder carcinogens in my hometown drinking water well, but when you deliberately reduce carcinogens into the environment, somebody somewhere is consigned to death, and that's just wrong. So there's that argument, and we need to make the government move on that argument in the same way we made the government move on other issues like slavery, you know, which our economy was once dependent on.
Right.
We don't regulate slavery. We don't ask for state-of-the-art slavery. It was just, you know, it's an inalienable right. If you can't, you know, to not be a slave. And
right.
So, you know, whatever the cost is, we had to divorce our economy from slave labor. All right. So I think we should divorce our economy from carcinogens, and I think there's a human rights argument to be made to do that. But there's also an economic argument, and this can be persuasive to some people for whom the human rights argument doesn't move them.
Right.
And it goes like this. You know, we've got more people with cancer now than ever before, and part of that's because more people are getting cancer, and also because our population is getting older, and also because the treatments in some cases keep people alive longer. So we've got all these people in treatment. It's sinking our healthcare system. And because most people who have cancer tend to be older, they're on Medicare, and so it's bankrupting that system. And so if we could prevent cancer, we could save millions of dollars.
Yeah, just even a small percentage of cancer.
Just a small percent. And so that gives us an economic argument to do so. And in fact, there's some very good economic analyses from, for example, the state of West Virginia that show that, that, you know, there are higher rates of cancer in communities who live near coal mines and places where coal tailings have been dumped, and that, in fact, the amount of morbidity and mortality created by coal mining is actually costing the state more in health care dollars and lost productivity than it is gained in terms of taxes and profits and so forth.
Isn't that amazing?
And same with it. California has a great new study showing that the amount of toxic chemical exposure to children and workers is costing the state more than the profits from some of those industries. And so I think that can be persuasive when the human rights arguments fail to move people.
Now, in your book, you talk about things that people can do to protect themselves. But is it realistic? I mean, really, a lot of these toxic chemicals we come in contact with, they're everywhere. They're in the air. So even if you say, well, I'm not going to drink well water, I'm going to only drink bottled water, that, you know, you can eliminate getting contact that way. But can you really eliminate contact entirely?
No, you can't. And in fact, that's why when I encourage action on these things, I'm very clear that I'm talking to people as citizens and not as consumers, because there is no way of shopping our way out of this problem. And I think water is the perfect example that you raise. I'm a big advocate of drinking tap water. First of all, bottled water is heavy. It weighs 8 pounds a gallon. And
that's
so,
right.
Burning fossil fuels to transport water from Fiji and France to, you know, Ohio.
I know,
it
is,
right?
Yeah.
An
exercise in excess.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And moreover, even if you filter your water on your tap, for example, you know, at the end of 3 months when you have to change your filter, where are you going to throw that filter now that's full of all the toxic chemicals that you don't want?
Well, I just make soup out of mine.
Well, you're going to put it in somebody's landfill, and it's going to go right back in the groundwater. So that's like playing a shell game with waste. And then, you know, and then ultimately, I think that the proof is in the data that show that a 10-minute shower is the exposure equivalent of drinking a half gallon of tap water. So every time we step in the shower, you know, you're breathing in and you're soaking in through your skin any chemical that's in the water. And so we all have an intimate relationship with our public water supply, whether we drink it or not and whether we want to or not. And there's no way of opting out of the water cycle. You know, our bodies are almost 70% water. And so the key there is to protect your watershed, to identify what polluters are in your area and go after them so that we can protect our water. Here in upstate New York, where I live, the biggest threat to drinking water now is shale gas exploration.
Is what?
Shale gas drilling.
Really?
So we are sinking wells in through our drinking water aquifers into the shale, exploding it, pumping it full of toxic chemicals, and then getting the bubbles of methane, a.k.a. natural gas, out. It's called hydrofracking, and it relies on cancer-causing chemicals, and it shatters the bedrock and allows other chemicals inside the earth to, you know, a potential means to find their way to us here on the surface of the earth, and it's a threat to drinking water. And so I feel that my duty as a citizen and as a parent and as a cancer survivor is to try to stop this practice and to encourage a transition to away from fossil fuels altogether and toward renewable energy. So I see that as my role as cancer survivor. Getting us off of fossil fuels does two things at the same time. It helps preserve the planet for the next generation, but it also decreases the amount of toxic chemicals going into the environment in the form of combustion byproducts. Soot, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons are a carcinogen to lungs as well as breasts. And it also encourages us to move away from using fossil fuels as a feedstock to make stuff. Pesticides, plastics, anhydrous mm-hmm. ammonia, fertilizer, all this stuff comes from a barrel of oil or comes from coal tar. And we need different feedstocks, and we need them now. And so I think the good news here is that working to divorce our economy from its dependency on fossil fuels is already on the collective to-do list for reasons of national security and global climate change. It will also lower the burden of cancer, and so you get a lot of benefits all at the same time. So that makes it a kind of heroic and hopeful battle.
You know, I did a show about 2 years ago, and the title of the show was "The Hippies Had It Right, Take Care of the Earth First." And I mean, and it's true. You know, I grew up in that whole hippie era when I was a kid, and I remember, you know, flower power and the attitude of, you know, I mean, the whole concept of sustainable living, which for many years people thought was some sort of zealot mentality. You know, why not take advantage of all of the creature comforts that we have? And it's now coming full circle. And, you know, people need to realize that the footprint that we're leaving here, with waste and exposure to toxic chemicals and even RF, I mean, the soup of RF that we live in now is being implicated for the disappearance of the honeybee. You know, I just feel like, oh my God, we're just so far out of whack. There's no saving us now. Do you ever feel that way? Do you feel sometimes like, you know, what does it matter? Because we're never going to be able to clean everything up in time to preserve life.
No, I don't feel that way. And I think it's important not to feel that way, because despair is a luxury we can't afford right now. And a lot of my readers, I think actually the biggest obstacle, more than what you just enumerated, which is, you know, our elected representatives kind of being in the hands of business rather than working for us, there's that. But bigger than that is people's feeling that it's too late. And that actually is that kind of fatalism. They think they're being realistic, but they're really being just conformists. You know, it's a way of kind of going along with the way things are and not having the courage to act on our convictions. And so I'm an optimist. I'm a cancer survivor. I learned how to have hope in times of great desperation. And everybody I know who's ever been diagnosed with cancer doesn't say, oh, well, you know, we all have to die anyway, so let's forget it.
Right,
you know?
They fight. Right.
They fight. And so why not bring that same fighting spirit to cancer prevention and to the environment? I mean, plus I'm a mother, right? I became a cancer patient at age 20 and a mom at 40, and I'm now 50, so I have an 11-year-old and an 8-year-old, and so they need a planet to live on. Their health can't be insured without an abiding ecology. So it's my job as their parent to keep the world a safe place for them.
I think it's important to have children. When you have children, you do become sensitive to these issues.
I was already sensitive, but yes, my friends tell me that giving birth was their sort of trigger into
it. It does. I really believe that it crystallizes assuming that you're not a selfish person, it crystallizes a sense of selflessness where you think to yourself, I may be willing to sustain these damages, but I don't want my children to. And that's really
right.
Funny when you think about that. It's almost like, I'm not worthy of a better life, but I want to make sure my children are. No, it really is.
True, but, yeah.
All right, let's take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Sandra Steingraber about her book, Living Downstream. We'll be right back. Ich bin nicht böse, ich tanz nur ab und zu auf der Reihe. Doch ich pass auf, dass ich verhältnismäßig sauber bleibe. Ich hab ne weiße Weste, okay, vielleicht hat sie Flecken. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases. You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow.
Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust chemx.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex,
bladderhealth.net.
Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now.
Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Woo! I just want to mention that Orbit Nutrition is giving away a free sample of Attack, which is a pre-workout supplement that does not have any caffeine in it. If you go to superhumanradio.com, down at the bottom, you can get a free sample, a free trial sample of Attack. A pre-workout supplement. Check it out. We're talking today with Sandra Steingraber about her book and the movie by the same name, Living Downstream. You can get a copy of Living Downstream by going to the website livingdownstream.com. Check that out. I have a listener who just messaged me on Facebook in Canada, Carmela Ciarzo, and she was just telling me that her mom died of bile duct cancer, which used to be very rare, but apparently there is a town in Canada that they have a higher rate of this cancer, and there's a doctor there named Dr. John O'Connor, who is the physician for this 1,200-resident town, and he is documenting cases of this rare, lethal bile duct cancer, and he is claiming that, well, there is claims that there is some sort of tar being released into the water upstream from them that is causing this cancer. So, I mean, this is nothing new, is it?
That's a story I haven't heard. That's an interesting one. And, you know, whenever there are rare cancers, it's easier to identify so-called clusters than when it's a common cancer. So epidemiologists do pay close attention to those. So I hope that listener, I hope the mystery is solved.
I know that she lost her mom to it. I've communicated with her before, and it was very sudden. It came on very sudden, and her mom really didn't have a fighting chance at all, so it was very tragic. Do you find that when you say things like save the planet, take care of the planet, and so on and so forth, that the mainstream of people almost feel it's a flaky idea? You know, oh, we have to save the planet. Don't you think a lot of people feel like the planet can handle itself?
That's not what I'm hearing. I feel like there's been a big shift. You know, Living Downstream came out in 1997 originally, and now it's out as the second edition in 2010 along with the film. And so I'm touring around with it sort of 13 years later, the response of my audience is very different. I think 13 years ago, people were bewildered at the idea, like it was a new thought for them, it was novel, the idea that cancer might have something to do with our environment. And now they're much less interested in hearing all of the evidence I could provide, and there's lots more now than there was 13 years ago, thanks to epigenetics and biomonitoring and all these new ways that we have of understanding the role the environment plays in cancer. But people are very eager to leap right towards thinking about solutions, about green chemistry and green engineering and organic agriculture. And so I feel like that a lot more people have a lot more awareness than they did a decade ago.
So what can people actually do? I mean, are there steps that you detail that people can take that will help them avoid exposure to these known carcinogens?
Well, I guess I frustrate my readers by not being prescriptive. And I do that very deliberately because every community is different. The people who are living, in the Midwestern areas of the United States or in the wheat belt growing areas of Canada, they're going to be exposed to chemicals in agriculture, for example. Whereas here in upstate New York and all over the area of the East where the Marcellus Shale is our bedrock, our biggest threat right now comes from gas drilling. And so we each need to understand our own ecology. So I encourage people to become environmental detectives in their own community. I hope I provide them the tools to do that, websites that are useful, right-to-know laws where they can, you know, enter their zip code into a computer website and find out the toxic releases in their area, how to access their cancer registry data so that they can do this work themselves. And also because everyone has their own interests, right? So I've worked with middle school girls who are interested in getting toxic chemicals out of nail polish. I've worked with football teams who are interested in finding solutions. You know, little brown mushrooms are in football fields are actually a health and safety threat, especially to linebackers who do a lot of lateral knee movement. And so we need a way to get mushrooms out of football fields, but hopefully not without, you know, doing it in a way that doesn't require male reproductive toxicants in the form of fungicides. And so I worked with one college football team who's really interested in having an organic playing field. So, you know, middle school girls and football players don't necessarily have lots in common. They all have different things that drive them, but they're all interested in taking on a different piece of this. So what I tell my readers is that, look, you know, we're all members of this great human orchestra, and it really is now time to play the Save the World Symphony. You don't have to play a solo, but you have to know what instrument you play and play it as well as you can with everyone else. And I work with a lot of athletes, and I assume that a lot of your listeners are athletes, and I am too. I do a triathlon every year to celebrate my annual a diagnosis from cancer. Now it's been 30 years.
Good for you.
Yeah. And so, when athletes can be kind of selfishly motivated people, you're talking about selfishness before the break, and that's okay, because what I tell to people who are really interested in athletic performance is, look, you know, air pollution, especially ozone, punches holes in your lungs in a way that gives you less respiratory capacity. And if you're exposed as a child, you'll actually, and you're like, let's say, a kid soccer player, you are breathing in lots of ozone and other, elements of smog like polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons from diesel exhaust and coal-burning power plants. Your lungs will never grow as big as they should. So you'll always have less tidal volume, less ability to, you know, respire. And that will affect your athletic performance for the rest of your life. It will change your development and make you a lesser athlete than you would have been. So if that's your motivating factor, then what you need to do as an athlete is recognize that, you know, is to fight for your right to breathe clean air.
You know, we're focused on cancer here, but the reality is that this toxic soup that we live in today is even responsible for increases in heart attacks. There's two really good studies. One of them I blogged about a few weeks ago that show that exercising in areas where there is a lot of automobile emissions increases your risk of heart attack. And people who live in areas where the main thoroughfares, highways, where they're exposed to higher degrees of automobile emissions than in areas that are further away from these main thoroughfares, they have a much higher rate of heart attack. And it's been linked to almost to like the parts per millionth of these pollutants that they breathe every single day. So while we may be focused on cancer, the reality is that there are a lot of diseases that precipitate today that did not occur generations ago that are directly related to our exposure to these pollutants and these toxicants.
Well, and of course, asthma is another one where we have, you know, increasing evidence to show that the air pollution is not just an exacerbate asthma, but it's actually a trigger in its cause. And one college campus where I was working, the one I referred to with the football players who were interested in an organic football field, some of the football players, as part of their class project, went out to investigate what kind of chemicals were being sprayed on the playing fields, that caught the attention of one of the female star softball players on the college, who then realized that her asthma attacks were happening shortly after the spraying. And so, and of course, because she was such a superstar, that was very convincing that, you know, that the alumni, of course, wanted her to do very well. And so there were changes made in the pest control practice.
Isn't it amazing that it takes a selfish motivation like that to affect the change? And granted, no matter how the change is affected, it's good. But it's almost like if you would have approached that group and said, hey, this is a good argument for an organic, you know, field, they probably wouldn't have taken it as seriously. But because there was an intrinsic effect on this particular athlete, it was like, oh, we really should do this.
Well, you know, I'm interested in, I will meet anybody with what motivates them. I work with nursing mothers who are worried about what's in their breast milk, and
right.
I work with athletes who are working on better performance. And so when I was listening to some of your advertisements, you know, I was imagining an advertisement I myself could write, you know, like, here's a great supplement for an athlete, clean air without polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons in it. You know, it will lessen your rate of inflammation, increase your respiratory power, and give you that extra edge, you know. So, but we can't get clean air by buying it. And so it's a supplement that's provided to us by the oceans. More than half of our oxygen comes to us from the world's oceans because of plankton. And thanks to loading up the air with the atmosphere with carbon dioxide, we are now acidifying the oceans with carbonic acid to the point where everything that has a shell, like made out of calcium carbonate, is on track to go into solution. So we're going to lose, if we keep going this way, we'll lose, you know, clams, and we'll lose lobsters, oysters, but also diatoms, which are part of the plankton that make oxygen for us. And
yeah,
so, you know, athletes have a vested interest in making sure all athletes, whether they live near oceans or live in the middle of the fields in the Midwest, have an interest in making sure our oceans can still make air for us.
You know, I never really put it together that our oceans are responsible for the air that we breathe until you just detailed it. And then I actually had this shocked feeling because of all of the oil that's being spilled into the Gulf of Mexico and what is going to precipitate as a result of that disaster.
Well, sure. I mean, the oceans are our planet's lungs, and therefore, you know, that's where oxygen comes from. You don't get oxygen without plants. And because of the oceans are most of our Earth, most of the oxygen that we get comes from these little plankton that are floating around on the surface of the water.
That's amazing. All right, let's take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we will close the show with Sandra Steingraber. We're talking about her book, Living Downstream, and also the feature-length documentary that is coming out by the same name. You can get a copy of the book by going to livingdownstream.com. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Selective androgen receptor modulators represent the future of hormone replacement therapy. Institutions looking to perform research depend upon the potency and authenticity of the materials they buy. That's why your institution needs to trust Chemex for their SARMS materials. Go to chemx.net today for SARMS S4 for your research project. Don't trust the success of your project to questionable sources. Trust Chemex.net. That's chemx.net. Chemex.net.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. Life is a continuous journey, and Change Your Life Now gives you the tools for continuous empowerment. Change Your Life Now is a practical guide to the biological process of age reversal. It's deliberately understandable and concise, so you can employ its message immediately and begin to realize the changes within days. The reader need only provide a positive attitude, desire, and discipline, and the results are guaranteed. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Change Your Life Now banner ad to learn more or to order your copy today. Don't wait another moment. Change your life now.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Hey, want to meet guys and gals with your same fitness interests? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Fitness Singles banner ad. Create a free profile, and you may be able to find a new workout partner. Go to superhumanradio.com and check out Fitness Singles today. My guest, Sandra Steingraber, we're talking about her book, Living Downstream. You can get a copy of the book at livingdownstream.com. You know, Sandra, since you're based in New York, do you remember, I've been out of New York many, many years now, but I remember at a point in time where the risk of breast cancer was much higher out in Long Island than like
That's
any.
Right.
Is that still going on?
Well, the Long Island Breast Cancer Study Project is certainly still going on, and in the early 90s, the women of Long Island felt that there were more communities out in Long Island with higher rates of breast cancer than in the rest of the area, and asked for an investigation. And we still don't have definitive answers, but we. But the research goes on, right? And what we have learned is that the closer a woman lives near to a certain kinds of industry where there are high levels of air pollution, the higher her risk for breast cancer. And we've identified certain chemicals that we suspect have estrogenic effects.
So, you know, I know that, and actually I'm getting prepared to do a show on sunscreen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some carcinogens in sunscreen when they use certain agents to cause the blockage of UV rays. But also there are compounds that have an estrogenic effect in sunscreen as well. What I always I don't know why, but I always remembered Long Island with its green plush lawns and lots of lawn care companies spraying, you know, pesticides and fertilizers on lawns, and I always suspected that that stuff couldn't be healthy, especially when it's atomized, when they're spraying it, it just wafts into the air and then it starts traveling.
Well, that's one of the, you know, the culprits that are being looked at, and also further to the north, Cape Cod, very similar ecology to Long Island, kind of a sandbar that extends out into the ocean, a sole source drinking water aquifer with not a lot of clay to bind to whatever chemicals like pesticides might be used on the surface of the earth. And so there are also high rates of breast and prostate cancer out on Cape Cod. And so these are kind of like two different but similar communities with elevated rates of certain kinds of cancers, and there are long-term studies going on. Meanwhile, just to the north of us in Canada, the Canadians have banned the use of lawn chemicals in most of the populated provinces and municipalities of Canada. So 77% of Canadians now live in places with pesticide bans. So this means if cosmetic use of pesticides, it means if you're not growing it to stop a disease or to you're not using pesticides to stop the disease or using it to grow food, if you're just using it to make things look nicer, then you're disallowed from that, from doing that.
You know, you know what amazes me? In Europe and the UK and Canada, they ban a lot of things that have been proven to be unhealthy for the population. But here in the United States, where organizations like the FDA and the USDA and all these other, you know, alphabet groups, they seem to just miss that sort of stuff.
Well, you know, they raise a good point. I think that certainly the Canadians and Europeans are, they have a mechanism in place by which when the evidence reaches a certain level and there's sort of demonstrable evidence for harm, actions are taken. For some reason, it's more difficult to take those actions here. One of those reasons is a law that we have called the Toxic Substances Control Act, which just in the way it's written makes it very difficult to take chemicals off the market. The burden of proof is so high, and also you have to balance the human cost to human health against the economic benefit.
That just baffles me. That statement right there, the cost to human health, it's like I want to scream right now. Mm-hmm. I really do. The cost to human health needs to be balanced with the economic impact. Baloney. If it has any impact on human health, get rid of it.
Well, that's what the Europeans decided a few years ago. They, you know, when the European Union expanded and accepted lots of new nation states, there was a hodgepodge of different laws. Bulgaria had one, and Sweden had a very different kind of one. That would govern the use of toxic chemicals, you know, what could be sold, how it could be disposed of, how it could be used. And so they decided to go back to the drawing board and make human health the foundation for the new toxics policy, knowing that it would require billions of dollars to transform their chemicals industry into a greener practices, but realizing that the costs would be saved, economic costs would be saved over a 30-year period as fewer and fewer people got cancer, fewer birth defects, fewer learning disabilities, less infertility, less asthma, and so forth. And so they did it. And so now in the European Union, they have this law called REACH. It's very complicated, 500 pages, but essentially it says no data, no market. So if you don't have the data demonstrating that this, what you want to sell is almost certainly not going to hurt somebody, then you're not allowed to sell it. So you have to test it before it goes on the market.
I love that.
We don't have any such law here.
And what a novel idea to actually put human life above profits.
Right, and what's working out pretty well for them, and actually it is spurring all kinds of innovation, right? So now that you can't go with the old toxic way of doing things, and now that all chemicals have to be dragged into the lab and be tested, lo and behold, there's just all kinds of new innovative ways of doing things, and it's actually changed the way we've done things here. So Silicon Valley, for example, had to re-engineer some of their electronics because they were no longer allowed to import certain things into the European Union as long as, you know, heavy metals were involved, because at the end of the life of that product, the heavy metals were going to end up in some kid's brain. And so so that sent engineers in California scurrying to redesign products here to make them greener so they didn't lose their market share in Europe. So in a way, we're protected here in the United States by laws that are being passed in Brussels. On the other hand, sometimes we become the third world dumping ground for products that are no longer allowed to be sold in the EU, but which end up here.
Right. I mean, you know, look at beef for a second. The Japanese will not buy beef from the United States unless every cow is tested for bovine spongiform encephalopathy, you know, mad cow disease. And it's like, and the irony is that we don't test the cows for our own consumption, but we test the ones we send to Japan. I mean, I just want to hit somebody in the head. I really do. It's so counterintuitive to, you know, to not take care of the human population first. It's like, who are you going to sell things to if we're all dying? Wake up. And not only that, but the politicians that rule on this sort of stuff, don't they realize their grandchildren are going to be getting cancer?
Well, I think, you know, especially with cancer, there are a lot of powerful forces that are arrayed, and they're not all just industrial ones. We have a very different a cancer society, for example, than the Canadians. Going back to the issue of no cosmetic, no lawn chemicals in Canada, when that ban went through, one of the champions of it was the Canadian Cancer Society and some of the physicians groups. And what they argued was that even though there's not absolute proof that lawn chemicals contribute to childhood cancers, there's enough of a troubling connection. The evidence is troubling for the connection between pediatric brain tumors and leukemia and certain kinds of pesticides, that the benefit of the doubt should go to children rather than the chemicals. And so they invoked the precautionary principle and they banned these things. All right. So the Canadian Cancer Society was out front in pushing for this ban. Now here on this side of the border, and we mentioned that I was in Washington recently talking to Congress and also in talking to White House staff, and one of the things that the White House staff brought up with me was that the American Cancer Society sees this new report, which concludes that the environment plays an important role in contributing to the burden of human cancer. The American Cancer Society sees this report as a distraction from the real issues, which are smoking and lifestyle issues. And so rather than championing environmental carcinogens as the Canadian Cancer Society, their counterpart in Canada, our American Cancer Society has been very reluctant to talk about the environment.
Which makes me so suspicious of all these organizations, because I believe that they are self-serving and self-preserving in wanting these diseases to continue on because it gives them jobs. And, you know, I mean, I love the term nonprofit organization, because it implies that there is volunteer work being done. But that's baloney, because the people that run nonprofit organizations take salaries, and quite often the salaries exhaust any opportunity for profit. I'm not saying that the American Cancer Society is like that, but what I am saying is I become very suspicious of organizations. Someone I'm very suspicious of right now is Michael J. Fox, and his organization that's supposed to be helping to rid the world of Parkinson's disease. And he has been totally silent and ignoring some very, very valuable research that's been done in California on stem cell, as it relates to Parkinson's disease. He's not even mentioning it. And when that sort of stuff goes on, I think to myself, maybe they make a good enough living running these organizations that they really don't want cures to be found. And I know that may really sound, just off base, but I can't help but feel that way sometimes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you that in my, you know, kind of long relationship in the world of the cancer nonprofits, that the American Cancer Society has a particular kind of mindset that seems to guide them. And, you know, they've championed getting cigarettes out of public places to their abiding credit. And, you know, by removing a known carcinogen from all of the airspace that we all breathe, and by encouraging smoking cessation programs, the number of people who have smoked have indeed gone down, and the proof is in the pudding.
But it's minuscule. If the American Cancer Society really wanted to do something about tobacco, they would force the American government to make tobacco a pharmaceutically dispensed compound, where if you smoke, you can continue to smoke, but you got to go to the pharmacy and pick up your cigarettes. You got to get a prescription for it, and they would eliminate the sale of tobacco on over the counter anywhere. 400,000 deaths a year. I don't know anything else that kills more people. But the reason that they're not going to do that is because the government makes taxes on that. And I'm sorry, if the government's making money on something like toll bridges, they don't get rid of them. They don't go, hey, we made our money, let's pull out now. That's important tax money to the government. 400,000 deaths a year. If they were really interested in saving lives, they would get rid of tobacco entirely. But you know what? That's another show. Listen, I want to plug something. For those of you that are listening to the show today who are in California, Sandra will be speaking at the Ecology Center in San Juan Capistrano, July 15th. And I guess you'll be talking about all this sort of stuff, right, Sandra?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so go there and check her out. And also go to livingdownstream.com and pick up the book. Sandra, I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on Superhuman Radio today.
Hey, you made it very easy. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see everybody tomorrow with another great episode of Superhuman Radio, so tune in then.